It's 8:10 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Joining me now on the phone with a look at what's going on in Wasatch County, I have manager Mike Davis. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
Hey, first, let's just get an update on how 4th of July went. I had read that there were a number of fires reported in Wasatch County, basically from one end of the valley to the other. All of the fires out and everyone's safe?
Fires are out. From everything I've heard, everyone's safe, and we did have several of them, yes.
So we're reporting that State Forester has issued a fireworks and open fire ban that took effect as of midnight. Do you think that's going to help?
I do. I think that with the heat that we've had, you know, we had a very nice green spring and so forth, but with the heat we've had and no rain in the last few weeks, there's a lot of fuels in those hillsides, and we've got to be protective of that. And I'm sure, you know, in some of the areas there wouldn't be any problem, but it's so hard to control small areas that I would support the ban from the state forester. So we'll be looking forward to enforcing that.
Yeah, so is that the county does enforce that then?
Well, the county sheriff's office will help with that, yes.
Okay. The Jordanelle Fire Department assessment area, my understanding, expires at the end of the year. So does this mean that the two fire departments, the Jordanelle and the Wasatch County Fire Departments, will be consolidated?
Actually, it's only one fire department. They just had a separate assessment area for the fire. They're both under the fire district, Wasatch County Fire District. They just had a special assessment for the Jordanelle area for the full-time fire use. All the fire service outside of the Jordanelle is paid volunteer part-time, but the Jordanelle is full-time, and so under the fire district, they had an assessment area, which does expire at the end of the year, and so everything, it won't change the level of service up there, but there's now enough development up there through the taxes to support the fire district for the full-time service in that area.
Okay, and there was at least one lawsuit, I recall, filed by the folks living in the Jordanelle special district saying that they were being unfairly taxed by both districts. So this basically resolves that, then they'll just have one light item on their property tax bill?
They will just have one item on their property tax bill. There won't be any special assessment or anything like that. So we are hopeful that everything is resolved at that point.
Does that resolve the lawsuit then, or had that already been settled?
The lawsuit... Actually, they're in the process of the final settlements right now on the lawsuit. And I can't really comment to that right now, but that should all be cleaned up fairly soon, and hopefully we can all move on.
Yeah, is that, are we talking like reimbursement? Is that what it requires?
You know, I can't speak to it right now, but when it is done, then everything will be any settlements or anything like that would be disclosed.
Sure. So will a tax increase then be needed by everybody then?
It's anticipated that the fire district is going to ask for a countywide tax increase, and that started a couple years ago. Much of the equipment for the fire district is quite old, and so we've got an upgrade program, and they've ordered the first replacement ladder truck. Those trucks are $1 million plus, and so that one has been ordered, and so the next tax increase would then go to, if it's passed, would then go to upgrade further equipment. So it is in the works, and that's a countywide assessment.
All right, well, changing gears, what's the update with regard to the Mayflower development? We have heard that the sale of the Mountainside parcel has been pushed back another few months. I'm guessing that once it closes, how soon could construction actually begin?
Large-scale construction usually takes, you know, 6 months to a year, depending on how advanced their designs are and so forth. I hadn't heard on the pushback. On the closing, I knew they were supposed to close soon, but I hadn't heard that it had been pushed back. I do know on the other parcels, there's three parcels. There's the Mountainside, there's the Marina parcel, which is down by the state park, and then the Lakeside, which is north, the area north of the state park. And those two areas are going through the approval processes right now, And so we anticipate seeing something there this year. They have some work to do on remediation work on the tailings ponds and so forth that's being worked out with the state. And they are doing that right now. And as soon as that's done, Wasatch County will process preliminary and final plats for those areas.
All right. So have the Marina and North parcels then already been sold, or they're being sold separately?
They're being sold separately. And my understanding is that they do have buyers in place that are just awaiting these approvals, in which case then those properties will change hands. So we expect to see quite a bit of that part of it happen. In reality, I don't know that we'll see much construction of dwellings or anything up there this year, but certainly that sets in place for quite a bit of work to be done next year.
Now, it's the Jordanelle Special Planning Area Planning Commission that's overseeing all of this?
It is, yes.
Okay. What about the MIDA deal? Has a hotel site been selected?
The selection process is up to the Air Force, in this case, a military site. And I know they've got some potential agreements in place with Wells Fargo on the Pioche piece, which is adjacent to Deer Crest. But I do also know they are talking to the potential new owners of the mountainside, Mayflower Mountainside. And so it's kind of up to them, but I guess they've got some options. They've got a couple different sites they're looking at, and so as soon as that's finalized, they can start looking for someone to build their hotel. So that is in the works. I don't know how far out it is.
So I guess once each of the three parcels gets sold, are we talking about having them three separate developers, or maybe even a fourth, given that MIDA would be the developer of the hotel site? Or is there a master developer of all of this?
What will happen is if the areas are sold, whoever buys those areas will become the master developer. All three of the areas will come under a master plan density plan that unifies the areas. And so then the detail of those areas falls under the JSPA Planning Commission, and there are sets of guidelines that make sure that basically this is all a seamless developed area, so it'll be difficult to know which developer is developing which from a look standpoint. Once those master developers are in place, it's my anticipation that areas of the development, it's so large that I'm sure areas will be sold to other developers, but they'll all fall under the master developer.
So this development allows for the tax increment funding of infrastructure for the entire project, all three parcels?
What will happen on the tax increment is that will be done by development agreement as the final plats are filed for any area within those three areas. And so it could be many development agreements if it's divided up into smaller sections, and each development agreement would have its own definition of how the tax increment works. And the reason that's done is because there'll be different amenities that will be allowed to receive tax increment, the construction of the Jordanelle Parkway, for instance, construction of public parking lots for access to skiing. All those will be covered separately in development agreements. And so depending on where those amenities are located, there will be a development agreement for that area, and the tax increment can be applied to those amenities. So there'll be many of them. It won't be one agreement. It won't be three agreements. It'll be several agreements that will address all of those.
And briefly, the way this works is that the county would forego the collection of property taxes in these development areas, and that money would go to the developer to develop the infrastructure needed. And then after, 20, 25 years or something, then all of that money, property tax funding, would come back to Wasatch County?
That is correct. And it's not just the county. It's the school district. It's, all the entities, all the taxing entities. But it works somewhat like a redevelopment agency, but it's not a redevelopment agency. And that increment can only be applied to those amenities that are approved by Wasatch County Council. And so there's a list of those things, such as the park, the public parking, the parkway, snowmaking, ski runs, ski lifts, those types of amenities that generally the public will have access to. Those are the things that will be allowed to have tax increment applied to.
All right. Let's see. The Heber City, there was discussion earlier with the county council about the Heber City's future annexation plans. And I think basically we're talking about this, the so-called Sorensen property there near the UVU.
Yes, that's correct. That area is called the North Village area. And that area going to the east up and actually somewhat into the Dordanelle planning area along Highway 32. The Sorensen group owns several thousand acres of property up there. And Heber City is discussing at this point the ability to include that in their potential annexation map. The city is required by the state, and I don't know if it's every few years, I believe, they have to readdress their potential annexation area and present a map and file it with the state. And then any annexations that occur have to be within that map area. So we do have a lot of discussions. There is some opposition from the county standpoint for them to do that. The county has been doing the infrastructure and preparing those areas, and so we are concerned that we get some of our investment back as well that we've been putting into the area.
Well, that's what I was going to say. 15 years ago, Heber City didn't want anything to do with this, so Wasatch County went ahead and formed, I think, special service districts.
That is correct, and those service districts would never have been formed had the city annexed those areas. But what had happened was UVU came in, we had a landowner that was willing to donate land for the campus. UVU had acquired money through the state, and we needed a place to put it, and Heber City refused to annex to provide water and sewer services, and so the county did create a special service district to provide those services and has built the infrastructure to bring it into there. So we're concerned. We certainly want to be able to realize the county's investment to get that back.
Yeah, and it usually makes more sense to have development within the city limits. But in this case, you're just saying that you want your money back and sure you can have it?
Not necessarily. There's more to it than that. As the county has planned this area, the acquisition of the necessary water for those areas the county has. And so all of those things together, we've acquired a lot of things that will make that area work for development. If the city annexes it, we're unsure that those things would be in place then to make it successful. And so that is the biggest concern. From a governance standpoint, I'm not sure it makes any difference to the county. I mean, if Heber governs the area or the county governs the area, it's just that we want to make sure that the infrastructure has been designed and some of it built, the rest of it required to be built in the future, all works together to make the system work. And at this point, we're unsure that can happen.
So does Wasatch County have to sign off on anything for that to happen, for to be annexed?
We certainly can protest the ability of that. I think in the final say, though, we probably don't have the necessary teeth to stop it. We'll just have to see if we can work with Heber City to work out what necessary details are necessary. We have met with them, discussed the potential of doing some sort of an agreement that would make sure that things are constructed the way the infrastructure would allow them to, but we haven't got very far with that yet.
Okay, so a ways to go then, huh?
Yes.
Yeah. Today, the Wasatch County Council scheduled to discuss WALD, I guess you're calling it, the Wasatch Open Lands Board. This is and you need an interlocal agreement to create it and to determine some open space priorities. I had thought that this something like this already existed. Something like this was formed years ago.
You are correct, but it never has functioned. And so, particularly with the discussion with the Bonanza Flat area and the interest that is there, It was deemed by the council that they would reconstitute this board. It's just laid dormant for several years. Nothing's been done. They're going to bring this board back up and let's find out what the public would like to do as far as open lands, the potential of putting a bond on the ballot is there. And I think what they're looking for is for this board to reach out to the public and see what the public would like to do regarding that. So right now that's where they're at. I don't know that they've really made more decisions as to who's going to be on the board, but I think they're working towards that right now.
So this board then would make the recommendation about whether to put an open space bond on November's ballot, and if so, how much?
That could be, that exactly could be what it would be, and what it would be used for, whether it's outright purchase of property or purchase of development rights, or exactly how we would go about utilizing funds that we might obtain. So I think there's a little bit of work to be done there. And in doing so, what properties? Do we want to look at the Northfields area? Do we want to look at the Wallsburg area? You know, where do we want to look at trying to preserve some land? And so that will all be discussed by this board when it's formed.
Okay, so it sounds like the board will be formed. There's no question about that. It's
You know, it hasn't been done yet, but I really think that the whole council is supportive of creating this board, so I think it will happen.
Yeah, and in terms of this board making some decisions, is there any kind of deadline? Because I know that there are residents who say that they would go forward with an initiative petition process to get something, it wouldn't be on this November's ballot, but next year's, to at least have it put before voters.
Yeah, I think the talk that I've been hearing is everybody's been kind of thinking it would be a next year issue. It wouldn't be a this year issue, but certainly if there is a public initiative, that's fine, and that works. If we work through this board and there is support from public and the lands are identified and how it's done, we might see the issue put on the ballot by the council itself. So there are those two options, and they'll both work.
All right. The Wasatch County Council also scheduled to get the results of a newly completed affordable housing needs assessment. I think this was done by Mountainlands Community Housing Trust. Any idea what that says?
You know, I haven't seen it yet. But I do know that we have had a fee in lieu proposition for developers, and we've all realized that that amount was too low. It wasn't enough money. And so that would be, I'm sure that'll be part of it, to raise that, and then exactly what the requirements are for development. We do have essentially a 10% requirement right now. Whether that's modified or changed, I really don't know. I haven't seen it yet.
So once you see the results, I mean, what do you do with them? I know earlier this year the council was looking at ways to provide affordable housing for city and county employees. Any decisions made on that?
You know, that is part of the discussion. That was part of the discussion with our Heber City meeting, as well as the annexation, was the ability to house our police officers, our sheriff deputies, our emergency services workers, our school teachers, and so forth. And it's similar to what Park City has been facing. And so I think they will be looking for ways to try and supplement helping that system. I don't know what the details are at this time, but we know we need to do more.
Okay. Hey, Mike, anything else that you wanted to mention?
No, I think that's, you know, we're looking forward to the things that are coming forward. We've got the Jovet Hotel up at Browns Canyon intersection. We're just getting that the drawings in for that, so those permits will be run in the next couple months. So there'll be quite a bit of activity at your direction and the Jordan Mail up there, and we'll see how that all turns out. We're hopeful it'll be a nice hotel.
Okay. Mike, as always, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Leslie.
Mike Davis is the manager of Wasatch County. You're listening to the local news. 8:34 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, the 2017 Kimball Arts Center Gala will be held a week from tomorrow, July 13th. In the studio with details, I have the chairwoman of the committee, Vanessa DePalma-Wright, along with Ruth Wright. She's the new associate director of development at the Kimball Arts Center. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning. Good morning.
So you want to give us the details, Vanessa, the when, where, and how much?
Yes. Yeah, so I'm honored to be the chair of the gala this year, by the way. We are really excited to present something that's completely unique and different. And as you know, Leslie, for the last couple of years, we've been doing a fundraiser. Last year was Robert Redford's wife, Sybil, who did Way of the Rain, which was huge. And I have to be honest, as I came to be the chair, I was told, well, how are you going to fill these big shoes and, you know, really kind of break the record from last year? And I think the committee really sat down and put our heads together. And it's about celebrating the arts in our community. And the whole concept this year is art starts here. As you know, we have the Richard Serra exhibit, which we are so elated to have as part of the Kimball Arts Center exhibit that's been launched. And really, the idea is to celebrate art from start to finish of the event. So when you arrive, there's going to be an art bar where you will actually make your own cocktails throughout the evening. We've partnered with Manic Project. He's actually one of the most creative photographers that I've worked with through fashion. And he's going to have a portrait lounge where everybody who attends can actually take a portrait from the evening as a memento. Done to Your Taste has done an amazing job at really making it a hands-on menu where we're actually kind of not playing with food, but in essence really utilizing the food as part of the art and expressing ourselves through the menu. And then obviously we have Meredith Parsons with Bluebird, who has been our design creative lead for the event for many years. She's really going to take the whole theme is black and white. So we're encouraging everybody to wear cocktail black and white dresses and kind of really embrace the Richard Serra theme of all of the prints that are currently at the exhibit. So everything will be incorporated into the black and white. And then obviously we have an amazing auction, which it's been put together. And then as far as the entertainment this year, we really wanted to bring in a DJ, just kind of give it more of a fresh, modern, contemporary vibe for people to really have a good time and to remember to celebrate the arts in our community and to really stress the fact of what the Kimball Arts Center is doing here and supporting people in the arts in Park City and really kind of just celebrating that and remembering that art does, in fact, start here.
So is it going to be held at the Kimball Arts Center?
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Yes. Yep. So this is the second year that we'll be holding it at the Kimball Arts Center. As you know, we have the parking lot in the back, which will be completely transformed into the gala venue as well, and the cocktail and obviously the exhibit inside the Kimball Arts Center on Kearns.
Okay. Tickets are how much?
$300 per person.
Mm-hmm. Or tables are $3,000.
Okay. And you can get that all online?
Yep. Online is the best way to do it. If you have any questions, you can certainly call our main number and we'll help you out.
Okay. Do you want to talk a little bit about some of the auction items that you got?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We have 10 fabulous auction items. The first item is chairs that have been created by our Young Artist Association or our Young Artist Academy, and they all are reminiscent of the Richard Serra show, and they're beautiful. I've seen a couple of them, and they would be a great addition to any home. We also have a couple of trips that we have. The two most exciting trips that we have are to the Montage Los Cabos and the Montage Deer Valley. Do you want to talk a little bit about those, Vanessa?
Yeah, well, as you know, the Montage here in Deer Valley is amazing. I think it kind of speaks for itself. But an exciting project with Ohana Realty, which is one of our big sponsors this year, as many people have kind of heard the buzz, is Montage is opening in Los Cabos in 2018. It's probably going to be one of their most iconic properties that they have in the roster. And so for us to have the opportunity to not only launch that property, but to partner with them to be part of the auction is huge for us. So we're really, really excited. O.C. Tanner has come through with an amazing David Yurman Hampton Collection bracelet and ring. And then we have an amazing getaway to Palm Springs Desert Retreat donated by the Samuelson family, Jenny of whom is on the board. And we have an amazing mixed media art by Dolan Guyman as well, compliments of Maren Mullen, who's also part of the committee. So that I'm not going to give you all of the goodies in the auction, but it's going to be really, really exciting. We're really looking forward to a very successful, fun, and interactive event in our community.
All right. It's usually a sellout, so people need to buy
tickets. Yes, there's still a couple of tickets mm-hmm. available. So Ruth and I are here today to encourage you to purchase the tickets. We are aware of the fact, Leslie, that the date has changed. That has been a challenge for many in the community. As you know, usually the gala was held the Thursday before the Arts Festival, and it's kind of become this tradition. Last year was the first year that we tried not doing that. And just, you know, the feedback from it internally was that we wanted to try it again this year. So we understand that it's a different time of the year. Please adjust your schedules. It will definitely be worth it. And, you know, we're looking forward to a great gala. And then you have, you know, a little bit of a 2-week break and then the Arts Festival shortly after that.
Yeah, pretty intense, though, for the staff to do the back to back.
Yes,
yeah.
I didn't want to bring that up, but thank you for reiterating
that. We can understand that, yeah. Okay, again, KimballArtsCenter.org for tickets and more information.
Yes.
Okay.
Hey, Thursday, Ruth. July 13th. We'll see you there.
All right. Thank you. KPCW News Time now, 8:40.
Park City.
It's 8:41 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, there are three finalists for the third annual Women's Giving Fund Major Grant. In the studio with details, I have the executive director of the Park City Community Foundation, Katie Wright, along with programs director, Ollie Wilder. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Katie, we'll let you start here and just kind of give us the background to this. There was a campaign a few years ago to get 1,000 contributions of $1,000.
Exactly. So the Women's Giving Fund is an endowment fund held at the Park City Community Foundation, and the goal of it is to create an enduring impact for women and children here in our community. And once you're a member for life, and every year you get to vote on a grantee. And really, the past grantees, the Summit County Children's Justice Center and PC TOTS, have been exemplary organizations that just show the impact we can have on local women and children and families when we all work together and donate together. So we love this program, and we couldn't be more proud of the impact it's had.
Okay. So you did much better than the 1,000 contributions that you were hoping for.
You know, the wonderful thing is that women continue to join. We have people moving into the community, part-time residents, girls who are, say, graduating high school, and donations keep coming, and we're growing that endowment. And that's one of the goals at the event this year is we've had some members who have stepped up and said, I'd like to see more young people. I'd like to see more women of color. I'd like to see more women, maybe teachers who work with youth involved in the endowment. So they're making gifts to honor other people and give them the gift of membership. So it really just continues on.
Okay. So how many members do you have at this point?
Oh, it's 1,300 plus, and I should have an exact number, and I will by Monday.
Yeah. And in terms of that, so you've put that kind of that capital into a fund, right, that's making money, and then you're using the interest off of that each year to make these major grants.
So over time, we think the grants will grow. So, of course, when people joined, many people had pledges that took about a year. So we had 1,000 members by the April of 2014, and then those money sort of continued to grow as actually people paid off their memberships. And then the economy wasn't so great. Now it's been great. So we're managing it for the long term. It's really important to us that we take care of that corpus. And so we think that as the economy grows, as more people join, the grants can grow over time.
So how much do you have to grant this year?
$30,000 grant this year.
Okay, that's significant. And then a grants committee with the Women's Giving Fund narrowed the number of applications down to 3, Ollie. Any idea how many applied for the grant?
There were about 10 applicants, and that doesn't sound like a lot, but this is a pretty specific grant. It's really to benefit women and or children, and it wants to be something ambitious because it wants to be a high-impact grant. So we had 10 really solid applications, all very appropriate. They were winnowed down to about 5 that were semifinalists. The Women's Giving Fund Grants Committee, which is 9 members of the Women's Giving Fund, visited all five semifinalists and then narrowed it down to 3. There were some really strong contenders, and I think the committee was proud of the 3 that were selected as finalists.
Okay, so those 3, we've got Holy Cross Ministries, Peace House, and Youth Sports Alliance that
right.
made the final cut.
So Holy Cross Ministries has this amazing Parents as Teachers program where they're working with families in their homes with children 0 to 2 years old. And then also a 3-year-old program with classrooms. And this is a great way for kids to get a better start by basically supporting their parents in what they do. And their proposal is to essentially double the program, which was a pilot this year and now could grow from about 35 children and parents to about 70 if they got the grant. Peace House is building their community campus out in Quinns Junction, and they just announced their campaign for that, and as one part of that campaign, they've proposed that the Women's Giving Fund helped to support the first of their transitional housing units. So the key missing link in Peace House, where they've got immediate shelter for folks, and sometimes they can help them find long-term housing, but that interim of up to a couple of years worth of what do I do now has been missing, and they're going to have that in the new campus. And then the third finalist, Youth Sports Alliance, is expanding. They've had great success with their Get Out and Play program to get kids involved in outdoor activities. They've expanded to after-school activities at Ecker Hill Middle School. They want to do more there. And they've got a great initiative to expand also to Treasure Mountain Junior High School, which hasn't had these kinds of programs in the recent past. And so these are all programs that would do a great deal to help women and or children in the community. And the Women's Giving Fund members voted, and on Monday we announced who gets the grant.
Okay, and the decision was made not by the grant, but by the 1,300 people who had an opportunity to vote. Yeah,
yeah, and that's one of the beauties of membership is that every year you get to vote on the grantee. And I just encourage people to come to the event and bring people who might want to become members, or if you're out there and you're curious, because it is absolutely amazing to see the impact that we can have locally. There's so many smart, generous, amazing people really working on hard issues. And I just think that when you're surrounded by all those do-gooders and those act, it feels really good. And this event, you learn a lot about some cool things that are going on. You meet people who really care about making a difference in the world. And it's just a nice antidote to some of the craziness. So I encourage people to attend, to bring friends, and really take a break to dig into what the good work that your community is doing because of your generosity.
All right. Do they need to let you know that they're coming? Just
yes, please. So you can go to our website, parkcitycf.org. The event is free, excuse me, because of the generosity of our sponsors, Deer Valley, Silver Star Ski and Sport, Farasha, and JP Morgan. And like I said, we invite members and people who are interested in learning more. And new this year, we're going to have a bunch of middle school girls led by Paige Rock, who saw what the women were doing and said, we want to do it too. So we'll have the Girls Giving Fun. They're super inspirational. The next generation is truly remarkable.
And again, if somebody would like to help the Match Challenge grant that you've got, they just can do that online?
Yeah, absolutely. You can do it easily online. You can do it at the event or afterwards, or you can call our office, 435-214-7476.
Okay. Anything else people should know?
Just glad to see anybody who can come Monday at from 4 to 6:30 at Silver Lake Lodge in Deer Valley, and please do let us know if you're planning to come.
Okay. Ollie and Katie, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Leslie.
Thank you.
KPCW News. It's 8:50 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, the Sundance Institute's summer film series opens tonight at Red Butte Gardens with Napoleon Dynamite in the studio, with an idea of what to look forward to here and there and in Park City. I've got Kara Cody. She's the Assistant Director of the Utah Community Programs and Government Relations with Sundance Institute, along with Cole Johnston. He's the Recreation Coordinator for Park City. Good morning, guys.
Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning.
So, Kara, the first film of the series kicks off tonight. Tell us about that. When and where? And
yeah. Red Butte Garden Amphitheater and Napoleon Dynamite. We've got a lot of fun activities in store. We've got tetherball, costume contest, dance contest, as well as both Jared and Jerusha Hess, the director and screenwriter, will be on site as well. They live locally here in Utah, and they'll lead a guided discussion before the film, just kind of about, you know, their experience, you know, making it. And I think it's just going to be a wonderful way to kick off the 20th anniversary of our summer film series.
Wow, 20 years already.
Yeah.
All right. And people just what? Bring a blanket, bring a basket?
Yeah.
And then...
Yep, blanket, picnic basket, low back chair, you know, think outdoor concerts. You know, don't want a high chair to block view, but just show up this evening. The gates actually open at 7:30, and that's when all the activities will start. And then the screenings start at dusk, so, you know, a little bit closer to 9:30.
All right, and then just till it's over.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay,
exactly.
And then what have we got then from here on out?
From here on out, we kick off the series in Park City on Friday with a screening of the documentary Writing Giants, directed by Stacy Peralta. And we're very excited to collaborate with Park City Recreation on some fun activities in the park. Basically, the idea is we're trying to turn City Park into a beach party. That's what I love about Park City, is if we don't have a beach, you know what, we're just going to make one and make it happen. Those activities in City Park will start at 7:30, and Cole can tell you a little bit more about what Park City Rec has in store.
Okay, Cole?
Yeah, we're going to have a sort of a table there set up. We're just going to kind of get the party going right around 7:30 and just kind of, you know, have a big hangout. We're going to have some surf music going. We'll have a bunch of prizes, probably some surf trivia. There'll be a photo opportunity for anyone to take a photo basically of on a fake wave, I guess, and just kind of have some fun.
Okay. And again, similar, the show starts at about dusk?
Yep, at about dusk.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about this, the Riding Giants. This is about big wave surfing?
Big wave surfing, yeah. So I think, you know, Laird Hamilton, Kelly Slater, and it really tells kind of the history of big wave surfing. If you missed it at the festival in 2004, please come out tonight. Even if you saw it at the festival in 2004, come out and see it as well. It's a film that just is really best on the big screen. Just those beautiful surf shots are spectacular.
All right, and this is happening at the bandstand area,
yep,
kind of
right
that
there
natural
Park,
amphitheater
yep.
there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you guys got any skate park events going on as well, or
as far as
that Friday night?
Not that night, no.
Yeah, I don't know if you want to tell them a little bit more about the tarp surfing. It's
so I don't know if it's kind of hard to explain. There's the surfers have come up with basically tarp surfing, and what they'll do is they'll ride on a skateboard, and as the skateboarder kind of rolls by, they'll basically roll a tarp over their head, so it kind of looks like they're in the pipeline of a wave. So we'll have that out. If anyone, I can happy to ride on that to show people. But we'll also, we can set it up as a standstill to where we can kind of throw the wave over your head and get a really, really awesome picture for you right there as well. So it's kind of cool.
Okay, you'll be doing that starting at 7:30 till the film starts?
Till the film starts, yep, right at dusk.
Okay. What else have you got coming up this summer?
Sure. Then we are actually doing something new. We're presenting a screening out in Camas. We'll be at the DeJoria Center at High Star Ranch on July 13th. We're screening Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. We will be presenting the film right after. Mountain Town Music does their free concert at the DeJoria Center. I believe the band that evening is Ghost Town, which is a country western. So just it really makes sense then to present Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. Just a very fun, iconic, just classic film to watch. Out in the beautiful, area of Camas. So we're very excited about that. Then we're back at City Park on July 21st with the documentary Chasing Coral, big hit at the festival this year, this past 2017 festival, collaborating with Park City Municipal's environmental sustainability team. They'll be leading a discussion on the city's efforts. This is before the film, a discussion on the city's efforts with their sustainable programs, as well as collaborating with other local nonprofits, just to kind of highlight the great work our community is doing for our planet.
Okay. And you've got a couple more, I think.
And a couple more, yep. We wrap up the series in Park City on August 4th with the Kimball Arts Festival. We're presenting a screening of another film that premiered at the 2017 festival, Walking Out, which is set in Montana, stars Matthew Bomer, very easy on the eyes actor, and just a really great father-son, story. It's kind of about a hunting trip gone awry, so to speak. But it's an advanced screening that we're very excited to collaborate with the Kimball Arts Festival to present as part of their Festival After Dark program.
Okay, and then it concludes in Salt Lake?
Yep, concludes in Salt Lake. We are doing our community choice vote again this year, where we ask the local audience to help us select the last film of the series, and that'll be on August 30th up at Red Butte. And we're asking the audience to help pick a film from the 1997 Film Festival. 1997 was the first year that we presented our outdoor film series, so we're, doing a throwback to 1997. So some of those films are The Full Monty, Prefontaine, as well as, I'm blanking on the other one.
Rick Bruff will remember.
Yeah.
But he's not
okay.
here right now.
Okay. Where's Rick when we need him?
Okay. Again, so we're kicking it off again tonight, 7:30 at Red Butte Garden with Napoleon Dynamite. And we'll be back here Friday with Riding Giants. Anything else, guys?
I don't think so. We're just excited to, present the series for our 20th year.
Okay, Kara Cody and Cole Johnston, thanks.
Thanks.